We'll start starting again on the Yud Amud Beis. The sixth wide line. So that Chizkiyo HaMelech, one of the greatest leaders of Klal Yisrael, did, among other things, six controversial things. Six of which the Chachamim approved of. Sorry, three the Chachamim approved of, and three they did not. And we're in the middle of the number one. Gonaz Sefer HaRepuyos. He hid away the Book of Remedies. Let's just sum up what we were holding last time. This is a very fundamental discussion. We just want to move it on to the next level. We basically saw last time a machloikis between the Ramban and the Rambam as to whether medicine, in general, is a legitimate phenomenon. Which we had the Ramban saying, well, the Rambam said, of course, it's just like food. Hashem created, person is sick, person is hungry, eats food, he thanks Hashem. Same thing with medicine. And the Ramban said no. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, the main things were meant to work was a secretly supernatural existence. That's the Ramban's way of putting it. It was the hidden nisim worked into nature, which meant that, no, a Jew would not expect to get sick. And if a Jew did get sick, the way of dealing with that was going to the Navi. Doctors are very b'di'evit. Now, we just have to know two things. First of all, this is on the essential level. This machlokes is not nagea to us today, as we'll see. And I'll note also that the Ramban himself, in another work, he has a sefer called Torah Sa'adam, which deals with inyanim of death. A lot of halachas, and it includes also inyanim of refuah. And there he writes that a doctor doesn't make, he says if a doctor asserts his opinion when there are greater doctors in the area, that's murder. Because leave it to the better doctors. And if a doctor is the only one in the area and doesn't provide his opinion, that's murder. That's what doctors are here for. So we have to note that the Rambam, when we actually are ready to take it halacha lemaisa, it's different than the way he put it in the Chumash. What he was saying in his parish on the Chumash is that when the Jews lived in the state of open closeness to the Shekhinah, like we said, the Rambam says, when we're in a situation where we're winning all our battles and we're blessed with material plenty, etc., because we are close with Hashem, that's one of the features. But when the Jewish people are not on that level, when we're in Golos Chas V'Shalom, so then the Jewish people are more subject to the laws of nature. There's not that open level of intimacy with Hashem. And then certainly, of course, you have to use doctors. Having said that, I want to really move on to the next level of this discussion, which really puts for us into practical perspective what exactly was it Chizkiyah did. So the Maharal, for example, many Mepharshim come with this approach, that the truth is that as far as we're concerned, the Rambam is right. Which means that we definitely have to use doctors. But, and here's the big challenge. Here's the big challenge, it's like the Rambam says himself. The challenge is utilizing doctors with the realization that you're completely in Hashem's hands. And it's up to him to decide whether the doctor will work or not. Just as with all material hishtadlis. Hishtadlis doesn't mean, when Hashem said, I want you to do hishtadlis, it didn't mean to say, okay, you know what, I'm putting it into your hands. No. The whole challenge of hishtadlis is to go about it with the realization that at the end of the day, it's Hashem controlling it and Hashem deciding. And that's the way it works with doctors too. Yes, go about it. Go about the doctor. But do not attribute the success of the endeavor to the doctor. Realize that at the end of the day, it's up to Hashem to decide. Now that's a challenge, to be involved with the material efforts, with the physical efforts, while at the same time maintaining that understanding and leaving the main focus of your efforts in the spiritual realm with tefillah, etc.
Why can't you just, you know, trust the, if it's already going to be like this and like that, just say, okay, I'll go with Hashem.
That's exactly the point. Hashem is challenging you. That's exactly the point. Hashem is challenging you. Do the ishtablis and maintain that consciousness. That is the challenge. That's part of what we're here in this world for. To be challenged by saying, do the ishtablis, and yet maintain that awareness.
It's a big business in Israel of the ones trying to find the best doctor in such and such a thing. Area. But on the other hand, it's like maybe this is like an overemphasis, you know, that I want to go the best. If it's not,
how hard do you have to work?
Jewish from concept.
How hard do you have to work to get the best doctor? That's a tough question. But we'll give a general guideline. You won't be able to say, well, make 71 phone calls at the 72nd and leave it to Hashem. Right? It doesn't work that way. It's never defined. That's why it's such a big challenge. But basically, the way the Chazon Ish puts it down is, do things that are reasonable. Meaning as follows. Don't grasp at straws. Let's say you're in a situation, for example, that there could be two opposite sorts of scenarios where hishtablis will not be warranted. For example, let's say you're in a situation that reasonably everything should be fine, but you want to cover every possible angle. So for example, a person is having a standard, ordinary surgery, appendix, okay? No surgery is standard when you're the patient, right? But a person has to have surgery, let's have to have his appendix taken out. These are things that are done by the dozen, okay? But the person says, but who knows? I have to be at the top specialist in the world. I'm going to travel to Belgium to have my appendix taken out by the top expert there. That is unwarranted ishtablis, because there, if a person's really coming with the approach that I have to do reasonable, responsible ishtablis, but at the end of the day, it's Hashem taking care of it, this approach of having to go to Belgium to have your appendix taken out manifests that, no, it's up to me to ensure that there won't be any possibility that something will go wrong. If a person knows that he's in the hands of a good, competent doctor that can get the job done. Now, what percentage is it? 97%? 99.9? I don't know. That's where we can't draw the line. I can't, at least. But when a person is in a situation where he knows it's responsibly and reasonably set up, don't go now putting in so much more effort to cover every possible theoretical possibility. What you have to do is go about it in a responsible, reasonable way. So that's one side of the coin. When a person has like that. Would that make the lawsuits against doctors superfluous? Depends what kind of lawsuits. Not really. Because at the end of the day, it's the same thing. The truth is that we're getting into subjects that really complicate the whole subject of bitachon and ishtablis. If a person breaks your window, not breaks your window, a person burns down your house, do you sue him? Or do you say, well, Hashem wanted him to burn down my house? And the answer is, you sue him with the realization that this is what Hashem expects you to do, because that's part of taking care of yourself. And you sue him with the realization that the success of the lawsuit is in Hashem's hands. But sue him! Unless you can afford it. You have three other homes, and you're really not going to feel it, and the poor guy doesn't have money anyways, fine. But otherwise, sue him. We're certainly not going to render the institution of Beis Din illegitimate and non-bitachon. No. There was an incident actually with, it was, I think it was Rav Dessler's father, where he was a well-to-do person. He was a big Baal Musa, big tzaddik. He was a well-to-do person. He gave a shir in his home every week. One week it was a snowy week, And the people who came to the shiur, they trumped in over his expensive, he had an expensive carpet, they trumped in all muddy, and they basically ruined the carpet. It was expensive. Didn't respond, gave the shiur as normal, perfect, you know, serenity. He sued them in Beis Din. That week they got a summons to Beis Din. The next week the shiur was on as usual. There was no, he simply was doing what he needed to do. That's the idea. A person has to go about reasonably taking care of yourself, but it can be the difference between a bitachon and a non-bitachon will be, are you doing it with the feeling that this is what it depends on? Or are you doing it in a detached way? Hashem expects me to handle my affairs responsibly. But I can do it in a detached, non-emotionally involved way. That's really different. People always ask, should I be doing yishtablis? Shouldn't I be doing yishtablis? Where's the room for bitachon? Where's the room for yishtablis? That's usually an illegitimate question. Bitachon and yishtablis go together. We're here in this world to do yishtablis, and you have to have bitachon in your yishtablis. In these extreme situations, you say that yishtablis shows that you don't think it's Hashem. Or the other side of the coin. That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is, let's say, grasping at straws, like you said. To make efforts that really should not naturally help anything. It's just a complete shot in the dark. The opposite of the appendix stories. Mamash, the other side of the spectrum. But the same point. You're in a situation, there's really nothing to do, but you're going to take some measure that it's a 0.0001% chance that it'll help anything. There also, the Chazanish says, reasonably, there's no room for yishtablis. Right? A person who neglects doing that thing won't be called reckless, because the thing is a shot in the dark anyways. In such a case, the Chazanish says, don't do it. Because the point is, if you want to give this a good term, what you have to help Hashem, so to speak, is to let Hashem do it in a way that appears natural. That's what your Chiyuv Yishtablis is. Don't make Hashem do Nisim. Hashem doesn't like doing Nisim, and Hashem holds it against people who make him do Nisim. If he doesn't. A lot of times he won't. But if he does, he holds it against them. It's a big point. So don't make it look like Hashem did a Nis.
But if nobody sees, then I have to make it
what?
But if nobody sees, I don't have to make it look like
him. I don't understand.
The Rav says, when you have to cover yourself with Teva-like emotions to be part of the game. But don't make it look like anybody else.
So why anybody else? What about you? Shouldn't look that way to you either.
I can look the other way.
What?
I can look the other way.
Everyone else could look the other way too. You're not better than anybody else. You are better than anybody else. The rest of us are not better than anybody else. Okay.
Does that mean that we should use this material until sort of most of the reasonable options have been confirmed?
Yes. A person should, we can generally say objectively, would neglecting to do this ishtablis be called reckless? If so, do it. Right? You have to do what's reasonably responsible in order for it to appear natural when it works.
No striving for excellence.
What?
No striving for excellence on the material scales. We all have to be mediocre and just get by in that respect.
I'm not sure what you mean there either.
As far as materialism, there's like this.
Should a person come
to you? Which means you go that extra mile, you push yourself beyond. So you're saying, no, that is not a Jewish ethic.
It's not a Jewish ethic. For a person to put his all into material success beyond what's required for a reasonably normal, comfortable situation, it's not a Jewish ethic. But we can't have a long dialogue. Very briefly, go ahead.
So doctor should never strive, you should not strive to be a great doctor.
Depends why. If it's for the purpose of chesed, yes. If it's for the purpose to become a great doctor, no. Better to become a great learner who's in the office most of the day, and instead of doing those extra 4 hours in order to become the greatest doctor in the world, becomes a person who learns shas. Okay. Now, of course, this is subject to qualification in all cases. There's no Shulchan Aruch in these rules, in these things. We're giving a general approach here. Okay, now having said that, the Maharal and others say that this was the challenge Chizkiyahu was dealing with. There was a Sefer Refuas, which meant that people were able to consult with the Sefer Refuas and heal their sickness. Now the way to do this was, the right way of doing this is, consult the Book of Remedies, consult the medicines, use the medicines with the full realization that this is Hashem healing you, and like the Rambam says, and then thank Hashem for giving you the medicines. Meaning, the medicines should be a transparent looking glass to Hashem. The problem begins when people attribute the healing to the medicine. The medicine is the reason for the healing. It's like we say in the Pasuk, Hashem, nature can serve two different purposes. Nature can be a curtain in front of Hashem, or it can be a garment of Hashem. A garment is something that indicates who the wearer is. Some people see nature, and they see the splendor of Hashem's workings. Other people, it's a curtain. All they see is nature, there's nothing beyond. Now, all from Jews. What? Mother nature. Now, all from Jews believe in Hashem. But the question is that really what you're experiencing when you're taking that medicine? Or, do you know that this medicine is good stuff, and it is going to do the trick? That's why I have a special tefillah that we say. When you take medicines, you're supposed to say, Yirotzen she'esek zeh lirukua kiroi mechinamata. It's not a bracha, but it's Yirotzen. May this endeavor bring me healing, because you are a free doctor. You take the medicine, you should feel Hashem at work. What's that? Because you are you heal free of charge. In some, I think it's in. Well, in Ali Saliyo, at least it is.
Okay. I just came across a quote recently, the exact opposite. I came across a quote that was cited of a free doctor is worth, isn't worth much.
What's that? The only free doctor that's worth much is Hashem. Creates remedies. Right. It says, Roifei chinam, shove chinam. That's what it says. Roifei magon, shove magon. A doctor who heals for free, that's the value of the what he provides. Now, okay. So therefore, today, who has the authority to say, you know what? People are not getting the balance right. They're putting too much emphasis on the medicine. They're forgetting about Hashem, so let's get rid of medicines. That's what it was Chizkiyahu did. That's what else Chizkiyahu did. He paskin that for the people of his generation should be up to a higher standard. It was sinking too low. They were starting to lean on the medicines a little too much. And therefore, he simply pulled away the base. This is obviously a big step. Chachamim corroborated it. Someone today couldn't do that. But Chizkiyahu, knowing where the people of his generation were holding, was able to take this step and force them to redirect their focus on Hashem. Maharal says that that's what he did. He says that the medicine was turning into a curse. It's always a curse when it conceals Hashem, when it substitutes Hashem. Just, again, you need an awful lot of authority to be able to make such a call. You need to be a Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Okay.
People that were not far away though from the Mikdash,
they were before it.
Right, but I'm just saying the Averos were building up, the Uriahs, the Dami, and all the things that were
not really
destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, so to say that they were on such a, seems like a very hard, high level.
Two answers. First of all, the truth is that the deterioration started setting in after Chizkiyahu's son. Much of the deterioration started with Chizkiyahu's son Menashe, who we learned about the other day, the one who Chizkiyahu didn't want to marry because he didn't want to have him. Menashe started the downhill slide that ultimately led to the Churban. That's A. Chizkiyahu's generation itself is described by Chazal as being one of the most glorious generations in existence. It says, Bodku midon v'ad be'er-sheva. All Jews, the career of every Jew in Chizkiyahu's time, I don't know how they managed it with everything else, was Torah. To the extent that, he said, 6-year-old girls we're proficient in tumis and taris, right? Those are the things that whenever we hit it in the Gemara, we kind of try to quickly get through it and avoid the issue, right? Or when we learn in parshas Vayikra, those are the parshas that, okay, whatever, we're waiting for the parsha of Meragim, it's more interesting. But every girl was a chazanish, a 6-year-old girl was a chazanish, okay? That was the Dar of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. That's the Dar that we're talking about. He knew what he could expect from his people. Now, even the generations who did deteriorate, we have to realize, was a lot greater than we picture them to be. They were on a much higher spiritual level than we were. The Goyin says that the kids in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, even at the end, were on a much greater level than the greatest of people in our times.
Was it Gilead Rises for them, or wasn't it?
Shvichus Damim refers specifically to the murder of Zechariah in the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't mean that it looked like the streets of Harlem. There wasn't murder going on in the streets of Eretz Yisrael. The standards that Klal Yisrael held up to in those days were very, very high, and a little bit practiced by some individuals could be held against the entire nation. And on the contrary, the very fact that they had Nevi'im, accusing them of all these things, and we don't have Nevi'im, is the top evidence that we're nowhere near where they were. What's that? Menashe? Ah, Chizkiyahu's father, Achaz. So you're referring to what we're going to see in a minute. You know, I'll wait. We're going to see in a minute the Gemara about Achaz. It's a separate issue. So learning was one thing, and how you relate to your sickness was another thing. It's two different things. What has one got to do with the other? But what happens when they get sick the next time? It's two different things. Forget this medrash now. How do we deal with sicknesses? By relating to Hashem or by relating to the book? Because Gil wasn't worried about the mismedrash right now. He was worried there are other areas of spirituality. He was into the mismedrash too. But he was also into Jews having emunah in Hashem. Okay. Fine. Now it's interesting, the Chassam Sofer adds that Chizkiyahu is playing with lives by doing this. And probably there were a couple of people who did die. Not necessarily, by the way, because, again, they were on the level of being able to, instead of taking the easier way out, take the harder way out and succeed with it. That's why he did it. Could be that nobody died as a result. But he was definitely taking a risk by doing that. And the Chassam Sofer says, that's right. Bechol nafshecha afilu noitel es nafshecha means that yes, there are things that are more important in life. And if all of Klal Yisrael could be held to a higher standard, it's worth risking lives for that. A little hard to swallow, but the truth is that it's just another manifestation, an idea. We're supposed to give up our lives before we ever have a desire. So, yes, in the big picture, it's worth it to sacrifice a couple of lives for all of Klal Yisrael to be living on a much higher spiritual level. How should we apply that today? Answer is we shouldn't. Okay.
Why didn't you just ask them?
What's that?
Why didn't you just ask them?
It's cool.
The
Chachamim? Chizkiyahu was a king. In general, he was making decisions on his own. To an extent, he consulted, yes. It's possible that he did consult with them, I don't know. But whatever the reality of the times was, the king, for whatever reasons, maybe there was just too much going on in the king's life and in the Sanhedrin's life, he was making a lot of calls on himself. And in this one, they backed him. What was next? Kites nechasha nechoshes. He chopped up the golden snake. Remember the golden snake? The copper snake. The copper snake that Moshe Rabbeinu made. It was a historic piece. But certain people were being led astray by it. And therefore he said, historic, it goes in the garbage. And the Chachamim agreed. And the Chachamim agreed. Girer atzmois aviv al mito shel chavalim. And here we get to what you referred to. Chizkiyahu's father was Achaz. Achaz was a Rasha. When Achaz died, he didn't get a royal funeral. Chizkiyahu, his son, who was now becoming the king, ordered that his body should be dragged on a bed of ropes through the streets. That was how his funeral took place. That was how they buried him. In order to make a demonstration of, a person can be a king, a person can be a king's father, but loyalty to Hashem comes first. The Haiduloi and the Chachamim agreed with what he did. But there were three things. What's that? He had greater honor to Hashem. What's that? There, essentially, there is such a concept. The truth is, it depends, because the Maaseh Ochaz was an Eved Avodah Zarah. He was an idolater, and therefore, Yotze Miklal Amisecha didn't have the rights of Jews. Lost the rights of Jews. What's that? How is it that he didn't influence him? Oh, the answer to that is that his influence was countered with the atmosphere that prevailed in Eretz Yisrael at the time. The atmosphere in Eretz Yisrael at the end of the day was one of extreme piety. And that was so all-pervasive that even people who grew up in wicked households could become very, very great. Now, it's about honoring his father. About Victor Miller said that a girl approached him and said her mother wants her to join her for Pesach in Florida. She's irreligious. Should she join her? The mother is irreligious. The daughter became a Baal Tshuva. So he said, well, what kind of lifestyle does your mother lead? So she said, well, she's married to a non-Jew. This wasn't her father. She's married to a non-Jew. Rabbi Miller told her, she's married to a non-Jew? She's not your mother. And that was that. Said the girl gasped, but she obeyed. She didn't go. Okay. Now, we'll move on. Yes. It says that as long as a person is behaving like a Jew. Otherwise, not. Next, what did he do that were three things that he did that they did not agree with him. Sosam me Gichon. He stopped up the waters of Gichon. Gichon was a spring outside of Yerushalayim. That was where they took the water for the Simchas Beis HaSheva from, if you remember. This is not that river. That maybe it was named after it, but this was a small stream right outside of Yerushalayim. When they were being threatened by the king of Ashur, and Chizkiyahu was worried that they were going to come and lay siege, he took measures. He tried to make the area around Yerushalayim as unfriendly as possible. One of the measures that he took was stopping up different water sources. One of them was the Mei Gichon. V'loy oiduloy. The Chachamim didn't agree. And the Mefarshim say, it was Mamish what we were discussing before. Chizkiyahu was the man who was teaching Bitochen and Emunah to Klal Yisrael. Apparently the Chachamim felt that this was already a desperate measure that wasn't called for. Similarly, Kitzitz Dalcho Tzoyseicho V'shigram L'melech Asher. When he was still trying to find favor in the eyes of the king of Ashur, he cut off the doors of the Heichal and sent them to the king of Ashur as a gift. The Chachamim certainly did not approve of that either. Same idea. Iber Nisan Benisan. The last step that he took was that he established a leap year in Nisan, meaning as follows. Normally, a leap year must be established Adar. You turn Adar into the extra month, right? Once you're already in Nisan, even though you realize that the weather is such, the seasons are such that really we should have a leap year, it's too late. And he made the mistake of making a leap year already in Nisan, meaning he turned Nisan back into Adar and pushed Pesach off another month. And the Chachamim did not agree. The Gemara says, how could he do that? What's that? Yes, it was already... Well, this was before Purim came about. But in the times when there is a Purim, that's how it would work. You would have Purim, and then afterwards they do it again. What's that? As the Sanhedrin. Apparently he did it as part of the Sanhedrin, and at the end of the day, his ruling was disputed. What's that? It appears that it was. It appears that it was. That's what the impression you get from the Pesukim was, that it was. The Mepharshim struggle with this, because officially, though a king could serve on the Sanhedrin, a king, even on the Sanhedrin, can't be on the specific panel of deciding on Ibra HaKodesh. Mepharshim asked this question. No, it wasn't alone. That's what Ibn Chemi pointed out. It couldn't have been alone. It was obviously as part of the Sanhedrin. Maybe as the head of the Sanhedrin. Possibly, they later disproved it. Meaning, he felt he had basis, and later they came and proved that it was actually wrong. Meaning, at the time, in a Hanami, they all made the mistake. But they subsequently realized that it was a bad ruling that he had actually had it. But
Lemaitre. He could have, like, a power of will decree, or his own, just to say, just kind of like.
I don't know. The Mepharshim relate to this as a problem. I don't know.
Next day is Purim. What do you do?
There was no Purim in those days. Mordechai hadn't been born yet. You have to give Mordechai another couple hundred years. In the time of Purim, that's how it worked. That was how it worked when there was a Kiddush HaChodesh. Yes, you did Purim again. Don't throw out the costume. You hold on to it. It's expensive to make two sudas. Okay. That was how it worked.
Generally,
this wasn't relevant, because they usually knew already at the beginning of the year if they were going to make a leap year. But theoretically, yes, that could happen. If they decide to make a leap year after Purim, they would do Purim again. Yes. Okay. Don't worry about the Megillah four times. Mishlach one is four times. Okay. Okay. So now the Gemara says, 1 minute. Making the mistake of establishing a leap year in Nisan is a little too much of a mistake for him to have made. Let's finish. Does Chizkiyo not know of the drasha that we say? This month is the first of your months. Meaning, once it kicks in, it's absolute. Zen Nisan, then Acher Nisan. Once Nisan has kicked in, there cannot be a different Nisan. No such thing. So Chizkiyahu couldn't have made the mistake. Se'ela ta'a b'dishmo. No, it was a more subtle mistake than that. He did not make a leap year in Nisan itself. It was more subtle. He made a mistake regarding the following ruling of Shmuel. Damar Shmuel. Shmuel said, Ein ma'abrin es hashana b'yem shloishim shel Adar. Shmuel said that this concept that you cannot establish a leap year in Nisan extends also to the 30th day of Adar. Theoretically, all until the end of Adar you can still establish a leap year. But Shmuel said the 30th day of Adar is already too late. Why? The 30th day of Adar could potentially become Nisan. Right? 30th day can always become Rosh Chodesh. Remember, in those days, it depended on whether Eidim would come or not. Any 30th day of the month was a suffix. You didn't know whether today is the 30th or Rosh Chodesh. And therefore, once the day could potentially be Nisan, you can't make a leap year on that day. Now, Sobar, here's where Chizkiyah made a mistake. He thought, Lamaise, it's not Nisan. Lamaise, it's Adar. The fact that it could be Nisan wouldn't bother us. No. It's either the 30th or the 31st. 29th is never Rosh Chodesh. Some months have 30 days, some have... We have today, every 30th day, whenever there's 30 days, we have 2 days of Shchodesh. There's never lamed out, that's right. Because up to 30, and then the next day is Shchodesh. Okay. Fine. That's that. We're almost finished the sugya of Chizkiyahu. Now we're going to go back to Chizkiyahu. Okay, we got into his general history, but now we're going to go back to the scene that we left the other day. We left him sick in bed. So what happened? The end of the story was that Hashem told him two things. The truth is that when he was sick in bed, it was also a bad time in general, because at that time he was being besieged by the king of Ashur. King of Ashur was basically laying siege outside Yerushalayim at that time. So Hashem told him, I'm going to protect this city. L'maniu l'man David Abdi. For my sake and for the sake of my servant David. That was number one. Because Chizkiyahu was informed everything would be okay. Number two, he told him, V'yisafti al yomecho 15 shana. Because Chizkiyahu's tefillah was accepted, and he was granted another 15 years. So, now let's remember how Chizkiyahu presented his tefillah in the first place. He said, "Zecharno es asher salachti lefanecha, b'emes ubalev shalem, v'atoyv beinecha asisi." Right? It says, "Please remember how I walked before you truthfully and wholeheartedly, and that I did what's good in your eyes." Right? What was Hashem's response? Okay, I'm going to save you Yerushalayim for the sake of David. Let's note that. A person who banks in on his own merits, meaning invokes his own merits, he'll be answered with a certain rebuttal. Okay, we'll do it for the sake of somebody else. Meaning, Hashem was accepting his tefillah, but, so to speak, putting him in his place. Because Chizkiyahu's place is a very chashuv of a place, by the way. But Hashem was putting him in his place. When a worthy person invokes the merits of others, he doesn't consider himself worthy. Then Hashem might tell him, I'm going to do it for your sake. Where do we see that? Moshe Talav is Chus Acherin. What better example do we have than Moshe Rabbeinu? He invoked the merit of others when he was trying to save the Jewish people. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, Zechor la Avraham li Yitzchok li Yisrael avodecha. When he's davening to Hashem to spare the Jewish people, what does he say? Remember your servants Avraham, Yitzchok, and Yisrael. Doesn't say, look how hard I worked. And Hashem saved them in Moshe's chus. He accredited it to Moshe. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, Vayomer lahashmidam, Hashem thought to destroy them. Lule Moshe bichiroi omad baperetz. If not for the fact that Moshe stood in the breach, lefanov, before Hashem, leoshivcha mosoy me'ashchis. And he turned back his wrath from destroying. So that's Moshe. What's that? No, it doesn't make a difference. The question is, in whose merit is he doing it? Right, it can certainly be for a person of the previous generation. We always draw on the chusim of our forefathers. Yes, as we'll see very soon. Chizkiyahu, on the other hand, talab bizchus atzmoy. He supplicated, asking in his own merit. Iksiv, as it says in the pasuk, Zecharna es asher salachti lefanecha. Remember how I went before you. What was Hashem's answer? Taluloi bizchus acherim. He granted it him, and Hashem said, you know what? You have a good father. I'm going to give it to you in his merit, not father, but ancestor. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, Veganoisi Eloir Azois, I will protect this city, Loishia, I'll save it, Lema'ani, for my sake, Uleman David Avdi, and for the sake of my servant David. So you see that Hashem granted everything Chizkiyahu wanted, but with a certain rebuff. This is what Rabbi Yishuah ben Levi said when he said, "Omer Rabbi Yishuah ben Levi, my diksiv." What's meant by the pasuk that says, "V'nei l'shaloi mar limar"? When I receive peace, it's bitter. Meaning, afilu b'sha'a sheshigel HaKadosh Baruch Hu shalom, even when Hashem actually did send him a message of peace, ma'uloi, there was a certain aspect of bitterness because it came with a certain slap. So yes, like Stan just mentioned, this is important. When a person is davening, Hashem will respond much more favorably when a person comes and asks Hashem, not trying to show Hashem that he deserves it. Person should come to Hashem either invoking the merits of the Ovis, that's certainly a legitimate thing to base it on, or to come and say to Hashem, I know that even though I'm not worthy, you do things for free. If you approach it that way, Hashem is much more likely to respond, at least favorably. Hashem takes it much more favorably than if you invoke your own merits. Briefly. What's that? It says that all these things are relative. We certainly very much draw on the schus of the Ovis today. It just means that a certain level of schus was used up. There was a fellow who, a certain poor man, came to a village in Europe. He was trying to get an inn with the gvirim of the town. So he came to the Rebbe, and he told the Rebbe, he wanted the Rebbe to help him out. He told the Rebbe, you know that we're relatives. And the Rebbe said, we're relatives? How's that? He said, well, my aunt's second husband was a grandson of your cousin's wife's brother-in-law. So the Rebbe said, that's a pretty distant relationship. Okay. Fellow didn't say anything, but he was a sharp person. He didn't say anything. Came to Shul for Mincha. He was waiting near the Rebbe's place. The Rebbe davened with a lot of intensity. He was able to hear what he was saying if you stood close by and you listened. So when the Rebbe said, Elikei Avram, Elikei Yitzchak, Elikei Yaakov, what are you saying when you're saying that? You're basically telling Hashem, I'm a son of those people who you loved so much. I'm a son. I'm a descendant. So this son, he was standing there. When the Rebbe said, Elikei Avram, Elikei Yitzchak, Elikei Yaakov, so the fellow yelled out, that's a remote relationship. So the Rebbe jumped. And after that happening, he came over to me and said, okay, I'll help you out. Okay. We'll move on. Okay, the Gemara, in a bit of a tangential way, the Gemara is going to go back to the pasuk that Chizkiyahu mentioned. Chizkiyahu, remember the Kal V'Chomer that he made, the Kal V'Chomer that you questioned. He said, remember that Shunamis, the woman who hosted Elisha, who she just made a little wall. You saved her son. So we're going to go just to analyze that incident. What was going on there? This woman, this Shunamis, we don't even know what her name was. Just so she was a Shunammite. So she told her husband, look, whenever the Navi comes by, he stays by us. Let's set up an official, we'll make him a room. The area. Shunam, yeah. Yeah. Let's make a little upper wall. That's what she said. What exactly did she mean by that? What did they set up for him? Rav and Shmuel. So machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, exactly what they did. Chad Omar, one says, Aliyah Prua Hoysa. They had a second floor, but it was open. It was a roof. V'kirua. And they roofed it in. So they let him stay in the upstairs. They made him an attic. V'chad Omar, and the other says no. Aksadu G'dayla Hoysa. They had a big structure. Here's where they live. They split in two. They put up a wall in the middle, dividing it, and they made him a room next to them. So either they roofed in an attic, or they set up a wall, a dividing wall, breaking their apartment, making a separate room in their apartment. So the Gemara says, "Mishlama lemando amar atzadu." We can better understand the opinion that says that no, it was a structure and they split it in two. Haino diksiv kir. Then we understand that she said, "Let's make a wall." Ela lemando amar aliyah. But according to the opinion that they roofed in an attic, my kir. What do you mean by a wall? And the Gemara answers, Shekirua. No, making a ceiling is also called a kir. The ceiling, that's also called making a kir. Okay. Now we turn around and we ask the other way. Bishlama lemando omar aliyah. We well understand the opinion that says it was a second level. Hainu diksiv aliyas. It says aliyas kirtana. Let's make an upper wall. According to the opinion that it was an attic, it was upper. Ela lemanda amar aksadra. But according to the opinion that it was a structure, they just split it in half. Well, actually, an aksadra means like a gazebo, an open structure that's well lit. What's that? A hall. Okay.
This is their apartment, or
what's that?
Was this previously their apartment?
There are implications that it wasn't the Mefarshim. I think that it might depend on exactly how we define an Aksada, which is kind of what I was trying to avoid it. There's a Machlokes in Bava Basra whether the standard term Aksadra means a building with no walls at all, in which case it's a little hard to imagine that that was their apartment, or whether it simply means that there's an open fourth wall. In which case, maybe somehow it was their apartment. So I'm not sure. Now, my aliyah. So if so, why are they calling it upper? So the Gemara says, "Ula sheve batim." When she said upper, she didn't mean up on top. She meant, we'll make it a high quality accommodation. That's what it meant by upper. Okay. So this was her idea. Alright, we're going to continue describing the accommodations that they made for him, but we'll wait with this for next week.